Anime Pulse episode 858. Back. It is I, Joseph, joined by my co-host, Andrew.
Hello.
And we're back again with another round of reviews, as well as a little bit of news, and of course, the IRL news, what's been going on with our own lives.
Yes, indeed. I don't think we have any side notes this week, so I guess we'll just get straight into it.
Okay, straight into it then, and boy, what a last few days it has been for me. As you may know, Andrew, here in the States, we just celebrated the 4th of July.
Oh yeah, that's right, Independence Day. Yeah, how was
that? Independence Day. It was quite fun, you know, I got to punch an alien in the face and slap a dude for putting some of my wife's words in his mouth or something like that, I don't know. But yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot. I had off on the 4th, off on the 5th, which my office gave us off if we wanted to put the PTO in for and if our supervisors approved it. So I did, and it was approved because we got all the work done that we needed to do. So nobody needed to come into the office on Friday. Huzzah! 4-day weekend, baby.
Very nice.
Yeah. Ended up just staying home most of the day. Thursday, did go out for a nice walk. It was really hot that day, though. Didn't actually see any fireworks on Fireworks Day, interestingly.
Oh, no?
No, I did really? Not. I went for a walk, and I passed by all the areas where they were going to set them off, but I was far too early in the day for me to actually see any fireworks going off. So I didn't get to see
You didn't stay out late enough, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I don't
Are you a fan of fireworks, Joseph? You like you some fireworks?
They're okay, except when they interrupt confessions.
Oh, that's right. I mean, I'm sure both of us have had that, you know, happen to us firsthand. You know,
oh, yeah. Just
what a bother that is, right?
Yeah, just
of course,
sitting there.
Of course,
with
I'm the one being confessed to, of course.
Childhood friend, and she, and we're about to finally work up the courage to say it to her. Mm. And then it's like, what? What did you say? Can you repeat that? Mm-hmm. And then we run away crying because we thought they're ignoring us.
Yeah, and it's also like one of those instances where the fireworks didn't just interrupt the confession, it makes the person who was being confessed to become temporarily stupid and they can't read the atmosphere that was being built up and, you know, what was read between the lines, basically. Because sometimes, even if you don't hear what they're saying, you can kind of tell what they were going for. But you become socially inept during those instances, you know? Everyone's been there.
Yeah. Aside from that, also on Friday, I went out for breakfast, went to a cafe that's like 10 minutes away from where I live, so that was really nice. I've never actually been there before, but the only reason I didn't go is the old man and his fiancée had kind of warned me off from it, saying how bad the service was and the food wasn't good, but it actually was great.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Service was great, and the food was fantastic, which actually, if you are on our Discord, you'll actually be able to see it in the food talk. If you scroll up to the 5th at around 2:40 p.m., I posted a picture of a Belgian waffle with a lot of fruit and whipped cream on it.
I see. Wow. The thing with the swirly. Yeah.
Yep. Got some scrambled eggs there with some bacon. Yeah, it was pretty good. All for only $16, that whole thing right there. That's a pretty good deal.
The four different pastries there? As well as the hot foot above?
No, you're up.
Oh, I'm seeing Outback. Sorry, yeah. I'm looking at Outback. Sorry, I scrolled down now.
Yeah, you gotta scroll down.
Ah, now
too.
I see. Now I see the bacon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Looks good. Oh my god, I don't think I could handle all that. Looks very filling.
Mm. It was quite good. And then for dinner, I went to a place called Tequila's, where I got the Pollo Fundido, which was like chicken that was over Mexican rice with bell peppers, mushrooms, and tomato with lots of cheese. Oh, so good.
One thing I will say is, like, in the image below, you had giant cupcakes and stuff for the dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's supposed to be a carrot, but the way they've drawn the carrot, it kind of looks a little bit like an orange poop.
Oh, the poop emoji?
Kind of looks like an orange poop emoji, but it's got, it's like dressed formally, and it's wearing like a bow tie. It's the poop. It's an orange poop wearing a green bow tie.
You just gotta.
Is what I'm seeing.
You just gotta think more pecora when you see that. You just gotta think like pecora, like that's something she might eat.
Ah.
Yep. But yeah, those are also giant cupcakes I got from a 100-year-old bakery known as Pereca's Bakery. It's in Schenectady, so they are fantastic, lovely cupcakes. They have 4 different varieties: chocolate, red velvet, carrot cake, and vanilla. I think the carrot cake's probably my favorite, then the vanilla, and obviously I can't eat chocolate or red velvet because, unfortunately, red velvet these days has cocoa in it.
That's right. You can't have that. Cupcakes or muffins?
I think it depends on the time of day. Oh, no, wait. You know what? If I had to, like, I would have to say muffins then over cupcakes, just because cupcakes are definitely more of a dessert. Muffin you can have any time of the day. And if it's like a good
that's your logic.
Blueberry muffin with like the crumbly shit on top, yummy. Yeah. So you can eat a blueberry muffin any time of the day, but in the morning, you're not going to have like a cupcake. Not unless you're a crazy person.
No, you definitely wouldn't. That's true.
Yeah, if you're one of those guys that's like, all right, breakfast, I'm going to have a cupcake. My dude, I know you could be saying like, well, it's the same as eating a donut. Even a donut for breakfast is, it's a little
much. Yeah, I was going to say, even then, that's not really much of a, even then, donuts is a bit weird to have for breakfast too.
Yeah, you think of like a donut for breakfast too, it would be like a plain donut that you would dip in your coffee. You wouldn't be eating like a frosted sugar donut. Not unless, you know, that might be for something for lunch. I could see happening, like your lunch break, you break out a donut. Breakfast? A donut? Nah.
The only way I could justify that is like you're immediately going to go run that off. You know, you just need that energy hit and you're about to do like a morning run or something. But I doubt a lot of people who do eat the morning donuts are doing that. So.
Yeah. And if you go to 3D World Things on our Discord, you can actually see over my past couple of days. On Thursday and Friday, I walked 11.72 miles in 3 hours and 23 minutes and total 20,805 steps. Got some really interesting looking pictures of some flowers.
I see.
Yep. Very pretty stuff.
The one in the bottom right, like those little purpley, violet, you know, and pink ones. They look like something you might see in some anime, too.
Yeah, it kind of does. And
yeah,
the one above it is actually called Bee's Balm, which is actually an edible flower. And you can use it as a number of different types of medicines and supplements, herbal supplements.
I assume, like, when you come across these wildflowers, are they kind of protected? You're not allowed to just, like, pick them willy-nilly?
Oh, no, I could pick them willy-nilly. These are all located in, like, non-protected areas.
Okay. Oh, I see. All right, fair enough.
But I don't know these things while I'm looking at them. I only take a picture of them because it's like, oh, this looks pretty. But, like, as far as I know, that could have been, like, the red spider lily of death flower. And it's like, if you touch this, it will kill you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still kind of baffles me that they had to put a warning out after Licorice Recoil because, you know, they had them chewing on a spider lily for, like, the ED. And they're like, don't actually do this for cosplay purposes.
It's not safe. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a real good little mini vacation, I guess you want to call it. Have another vacation coming up. In fact, I have my Otakon badge right here. I came in the mail. It's
coming up.
Stepped up their game. Nice. It's a holographic badge. August the 2nd to the 4th, baby.
Can I see a picture sometime? You know, do I take your time with it? But you post a picture. I want to see what an Otakon pass looks like.
Let's see if I could actually... let's see. Where is the... Do this. We'll do this. Oh, I still have still have my can you focus on this? Do I have to turn the background on this off? Damn it.
Oh, I actually have to click on the stream. I think you're streaming, aren't you?
How do I
even
change video background? Here we go.
I have derailed things.
None. All right.
Like this.
I didn't save.
Oh my god!
There we go. So there it is. And if I do this, you can kind of see it changes.
Ooh, that's kind of nifty. I like that.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy on the back. Just I'll put my name here and yeah. So got that. Just have to get it started and boom, all set.
Looks good. Well, exciting times. That's coming up next month, is it? Or the end of this month? Which, what's the exact date again?
August the 2nd to the 4th. So I will be gone starting the 1st of August, which is in, let's see here, 1, 2, 3 weeks from now. On the first week of August, I will not be able to attend, obviously, the podcast because I will be on a flight back home on the 4th of August.
All right, yeah, so we'll see what happens around that time, but, you know, looking forward to seeing some cool pics, and then you enjoying the first convention you've been to physically in the years now, right? Been a while.
Yes, in fact, this will be since 2011 was the last time I was at Otakon, so, yeah. It's
over
it's,
10 years.
It even changed location. It used to be in Baltimore, D.C., or now it's in Washington, D.C., so it's moved. Yeah, so
it'll be interesting to hear the contrast of like conventions used to be like this, and either it's still the same or it's like changed drastically from you remember.
I think in terms of style, still be relatively the same. Although I am suspecting there may be a lot more VTuber stuff.
Oh yeah, well the kind of otaku interest will probably have expanded, I suppose.
To it would be so VTuber cool stuff. Though if we like they didn't list them in the guests yet. There are guests you can see. Among the, in fact, some of them are actually guests I would actually like to meet from some studios as well. I'll have to post the list, but it would be interesting if they were able to get like one of those VTuber meet and greet things set up where like, you know, have like the giant mirror panel and they're just like, hello. And it's like, hello, VTuber lady. Hi.
I'd genuinely be surprised if you don't manage to get any. I think there probably will be, because Otakon is quite a big convention, and even the smaller ones sometimes manage to get at least one or two. So, it's oftentimes by request, too, so at least the big famous ones probably will have, like, you'll get something from one of the big brands out there, like your Niji Sanji's and Hololive. Maybe it'll be a little bit hard to get some of the indie ones, because, you know, it's a little bit more of an organizational thing, and it's by request a lot of the time, but we'll see.
Yeah, I got an animator who worked on Encouragement of Climb.
Oh, hey, that's a show.
He also worked on ReZero.
ReZero, nice.
Starting Life Another, Fate, Clannad, Linear, Prism, Ilya, Dark Sword, Another World, Beaufirty. Let's see.
It's quite a large
We have a lot of producers from Maho Film who will be there.
Cool. Maybe this is your chance to pitch some of those amazing anime ideas we have. I'm just joking, but
yeah, we've got some voice actors, actresses here from the Seven Deadly Sins, apparently.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Mm. There's some characters who are gonna be showing up there. Some people. No one I know straight away, but
oh yeah. Some voice actors likely and stuff from, you know,
artists, animators, voice actors, producers, comedians. Yeah.
Vocalists. Oh, you mean Hololive YouTubers? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We already mentioned them.
Yeah, ha ha ha. Good ha, one. Ha. Ha, ha. Apparently they have a furry that's going to be there as well. Interesting.
Oh, there will be lots of furries. Yeah. Even when I went to like a convention in London, there's always like a large amount of furries. You cannot escape the furries. They're just there.
They have the money.
They do have a lot of money. Apparently those suits are not cheap, so yes, they have a lot of money. Yep. Holy crap. And hopefully they also have hygiene. because I've heard those things can smell.
Yeah, you gotta.
I've managed to stay far enough away, but I've heard.
No idols though. No idols among this this crowd. So.
Oh, no actual like Japanese idols come over to perform.
Or underground, or like you that. Know, like some underground idols sometimes will be like, let's go to a convention that maybe nobody's heard of us from, but we'll like earn a following and point
that's
to
true.
Undergroundness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's all I really have to talk about. It's
coming
been,
soon.
Yeah, coming soon to an Anime Pulse near you. I will have stuff to talk about how my trip down to Washington, D.C. will be. And yeah, we'll cover more when we get there.
And some sick-ass merch as well.
Oh, so yes, I am going to be buying some stuff and expect that I'll definitely be buying some stuff to do a giveaway once I'm back from it, so... I don't know what I'll call it. Probably the Fall Festival giveaway is what I'll do.
Fall Festival.
Yeah, I'll have some merchandise for the Fall Festival giveaway I'll buy.
Anime Pulse Fest. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. And with that, over to you, Andrew.
Okay. This week's been pretty busy for me. Largely on like a kind of a more boring real life work family balance side of things, so not really worth mentioning, but I've been pretty busy trying to find any side time I can in order to like continue my grind, my practice into Street Fighter 6 with like the new Bison that came out. I did in fact enter that tournament I mentioned, I think, on Sunday. I'm sorry I let you all guys down. I went 0-2, that being said, that meaning I didn't win a single set against anybody. And in fact, a set is made up of 3 matches, 1st to 3. I didn't win a single match either. So, yeah, there's not really much to say. I kind of choked. I'd say I choked, but I think my ability, you know, choked would imply that I had a chance and I just made mistakes. It was just, I just wasn't ready. My Bison wasn't ready. It was undercooked. So, unfortunate for me, I still need to spend a lot more time just labbing, working, and just kind of getting used to the character some more. And I think just also overall just improving my fundamentals, you know, and stuff. So that's the fun thing about the quote unquote fun thing about the fighting game is that, you know, love it or hate it, you will lose a bunch and it's all about, you know, picking yourself up and continuing on and stuff. So I've still been improving since then. Still not to an extent where I think the result will change drastically next tournament. I'm going to probably still enter this week again on Tuesday. See how that goes. But, Wolfling says, darn, Hote Bison would have had a brief OP time before being nerfed. No, he's not been nerfed. There haven't been any updates or anything like that. He's come out, and the opinions on him are a little bit mixed in some places. He's got very defined strengths, and some of the professionals in the Japanese scene especially have had quite a bit of... Actually, no, not just the Japanese scene, I lie. Some of them in the Western scene, like Punk, one of like the big American players, he's won an online tournament like day 2 after Bison came out. So Bison is like, considered to be very strong, but he's a glass cannon. So like, if you're like the pros, you have very solid fundamentals and your defense, you know, is on point, then you can make up for the fact that he actually has some of the worst defense in the game. If you're at my level and you're kind of a mid player, then you're going to have trouble with his weaknesses, you know, and making up for it with his strengths. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not a Bison's fault. It's definitely a my fault thing. Definitely not the character is bad. He's good. He hasn't been nerfed yet either. He probably, based on the strengths that he does have, there's all these like trending tweets you can find where they're like, this is ridiculous damage. Look at what Bison can do. He can take like 2/3 of your health away in one combo and stuff. And he can. He does do a lot of damage. It does require some setup, though, is the thing that a lot of people sort of glance up over, is that in order to do that huge amount of damage, he does have to do like 2 sequences where the opponent choked, basically. But if he does hit, he does hit like a truck. And I think that is probably something that I can imagine Capcom will tone down when they do get around to patching him next, is that they probably will tone down how much damage he does do. Because there is one attack he does where once he plants the bomb on you, he makes you explode and he's guaranteed to get like an OD Psycho Crusher into you, which he can convert into his level 3. And that's like 3 moves he's hit you with. And yet it does take the whole like 7,050, like most of your life bar away with just that one move. It's because they basically didn't scale any of the damage after the detonation from the Devil Reverse. So he's a bit strong in some areas that I think they probably want to balance out. But yeah, it's just something that I need to improve at. And I've just kind of been balancing practicing with the fighting game. As well as actually just writing some scripts too. I've gotten a little bit more back into script writing and sort of making some fun stuff on the side. Don't really want to talk too much about it until it's actually released. I'm hoping to get it out within the next 1 or 2 weeks. I know a lot of people here aren't super interested in like fighting game material specifically, but I do hope that when it does come out, you might give it a little watch just for me. That'd be nice. But yeah, more on that when it does come out. I'll probably post it here as well just to share it in case people are interested. But yeah, no, that's basically it for this week. Onto something from Japan though. I do want to like talk to sort of round up the story from last week with something a little different. So last week I talked about arcades, the arcade scene in Japan. But you know, what about if you actually are the more outdoorsy type and you do want to touch grass and go out there and sightsee? Because there's plenty of things outside of, you know, outside of your anime stores. I know, shocking. The stuff outside of your anime stores and arcades, there's also the sightseeing stuff. And there's no better place to kind of really get a grasp for the outdoors and definitely do your Joseph worth of steps than just going to Kyoto and going to the various shrines, nice, temples, and scenic locations.
Oh, nice, is what I said.
Oh, nice, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to sort of categorize it there in that basically when we went to Kyoto, we definitely did the most walking we did throughout the entire trip. It is the historic center of Japan. It used to be the capital at one point before, you know, it went to Tokyo. In fact, there was
could
a time
have
where
a step counter
this
on you.
Capital. Sorry?
Should have had a step counter on you.
Oh, I think my friend did. I can't remember how much we did. I might need to get the details off him. He did actually have a step counter. I didn't bring a step counter, but he did. Ah. So I might need to ask him how much we did in Kyoto, because he definitely said we did the most in Kyoto. But I don't remember how much we did. It was a lot, though. But what I would say is like that is definitely the place you want to do there. You definitely have to have some level of endurance, because it's not just flatland that you're walking on, especially if you're going to some of the temples. There's a lot of steps. There's a lot of like inclines. It's not the most even land in the world. In fact, many bits in that sort of segment of Japan are kind of hilly.
Music.
Yeah, exactly. As you're going up there, there was actually, crazy enough, actually in one of the shrines, the Inari Shrine, there were some people who were like really early in the morning in jogger kind of clothes and just like going up those stairs. And I'm just like, wow, yeah. If you do this every day, you are going to have like amazing legs from like going up those stairs every
Never
morning.
Skip leg
so
day.
I do want to kind of list in terms of like the historic main like cultural. You know, when you look up in Kyoto, you might look up like top places to go visit culturally and stuff to do the sightseeings. I will say that out of the places, there were some that really hit and there were some that were surprisingly good. And there were some I wasn't too thrilled at. So I'll go from kind of like worst to best, in my opinion, from my experience. But, you know, maybe it still is worth considering if, you know, if it's in your sort of realm of interest. The first one that I think was kind of a little bit on the more disappointing side from Kyoto, if I'm to be honest, was the Gion district. So this, if you don't know, is the street where it's known for like being the part where the geishas are and stuff.
Right.
It's like the
red
Kyoto's
light
geisha
district.
The host, hostesses and stuff, and you find it around there. The issue is here that I had with some other parts of Kyoto is Kyoto just attracts a lot of tourists, as you might expect. And this one street has just become just touristastic. It doesn't really capture a lot of that kind of old Japan historic feel to it as much as I would have hoped. And there were actually other segments of even just Kyoto in itself where I kind of felt like I got a much bigger hit of like potent old Japanese culture to it. Also, they've kind of segmented some of the side streets where the actual geishas could be seen off to like you're only kind of supposed to be there or take photos there if you actually have business in that section of the city, you know, so you can't even really sightsee, you know, some of that area. And in fact, you kind of don't see, they're trying to like mark it off from tourists basically, because I guess the tourists were kind of impeding some of the, you know, can you understand it? Kind of is kind of getting in the way of some
getting
of the stuff the geishas are doing.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Sometimes. So it's like, it's one of those examples of like, we can't have nice things because honestly, when I was traveling, because when I was traveling with my friend, we did notice there are just some tourists that do take the piss sometimes, you know, and just seem that they're kind of getting in the way and stuff and, you know, standing in the middle of the street where people are doing stuff. So I can understand, but at the same time, it is just, I do have to add it as sort of a little disappointment. I was kind of hoping to see a little bit more kind of culture when I was at that part of the city. And like, I saw one geisha and just by chance, because she was in a taxi that drove past, you know, and I was just like, kind of, I guess that was all right, I suppose. So I was a little bit disappointed with that one, if I'm honest with you. I think maybe, just a side note, you might be more satisfied because there are theaters, there are shows you can book with, like, that feature geishas doing performances. I think if we had booked that in this district, we probably would have been a lot more satisfied. So just put a little asterisk there. Maybe I wasn't doing it right. Basically, I thought we could just simply get a taste of it by just walking through the street. I think you'd have to book something if you really want to get that sort of historic Japanese traditional experience there. So that was on the more disappointing side. This is a temple. This next one is on also on the slightly disappointing side as well, that you've no doubt seen in an anime when the characters go on a field trip to Kyoto. This is the, it's called the Kiyomizu-dera? Yeah, Kiyomizu-dera, which is like that large, tall temple that has like,
oh, yeah,
that does that scaffolding.
This is in, it's in Love Hina. This is where,
yeah. It's like bunch of anime that have like high school or whatever, they always go to a field trip in Kyoto and they go to this temple, right? And they're looking over the pier, yep, or whatever and stuff. And there's this old story about jumping off of it. If you survive, you have good luck or something if you jump off it. No one's allowed to actually jump off it now. It had you a few little mini attractions that you're not allowed to, no. I think you honestly could survive because if you look below, there's like a little grassy hill. If you land on your legs, you probably will break your legs, but you might survive actually. I'm just saying, don't actually go for it. But yeah, they have that, and there are some little mini attractions there that are kind of nice. Like you can pull up this spear, this large like lance thing, and if you pick it up, apparently it's good luck as well. There's these free fountains you can drink from. One of them represents success in academics. One represents success in love, and one represents success in money, I think, or some shit. Right, but you can't drink out of more than two of them, or it's considered greedy and you get cursed. So you have to choose two.
You have to drink all three. That way, you undo the curse.
yeah, sure, go for that. I think it's considered greedy and it's bad, so you don't
super
do that.
Curse,
but yeah. Similar to the whole Gion district thing, it's just so touristastic. Even when we went and stuff, the area around it is quite nice. The walk to it is nice, but it is just so so well known that it is just flooded with tourism. Yeah. I think maybe if you go super early in the morning, you might get away with something a little bit more tranquil and stuff, and it might feel a bit more like a shrine or a temple. And that's the thing, is Japan has no shortages of temples that you and shrines that are not super well known, that you can walk in and get a good sense of like, oh, I'm in nature and I'm just surrounded by this kind of traditional Japanese setting, and you can really drink it in without being just flooded with tourists and queues everywhere, you know? So it might not live up to the hype in that sense, but, you know, it's a decent walk overall, and it does cover a large amount of ground, so it wasn't as disappointing as the Gion District. Now, the one that's kind of mid out of this bunch was the Bamboo Forest. So there's also a place called the... What's it called again? I think it's just called the... Arashiyama Bamboo Forest. It's just known as being the Bamboo Forest attached to, like, a park, and it's got, like, a nice little river next to it as well. It's also near this place where you can go see monkeys and stuff, but we didn't go see it because we were about to leave Kyoto that day. Good for getting those scenic shots with the bamboo, and it is very pretty. I would say once again you have to go very early in the morning though, if you want to have any chance in hell of like not being just surrounded by crowds, because the only way to get good shots here is if you're by yourself surrounded by bamboo, right? Not just like a bunch of people with cameras everywhere, you know? So this place is nice. I put this one in the mid. The next one was actually just a pleasant surprise because we were initially not going to go to this place, but we arrived in Kyoto a little earlier than we expected and had time to actually just travel here. This one here is called, this is the second last one I've got, is called the Kinkakuji, which is the Gold Pavilion, I believe it's known as. It's it's a golden temple. Shit, the image is not loading. Yeah. You can look at it yourself online. But it's like a golden, it's just like a golden temple that is, it's just like by a lake, very tranquil, very pretty and stuff. A nice little walk around it too. And, you know, it wasn't too crowded, even in the middle of the afternoon, which was the same kind of time we went to see the Kiyomizu-dera. So that was definitely a selling point as well. There's not necessarily as many things to do, but we did actually stop by one of those like kind of traditional sort of like cafes where you sit outside underneath an umbrella and they serve you some like matcha tea and some little sweets. So that was kind of nice. It was a nice first impression when we arrived in Kyoto to go to this one as well. It was a nice little bonus. So I'm glad we did. Also, speaking of which, traveling between these places was actually quite a snap. Despite how traditional everything is, and it doesn't have, everything is a lot more further apart in Kyoto, their bus system is actually quite good. I wouldn't actually sleep on their bus system. Like, while their tubes are not as good, their trains are not as good as Tokyo or Osaka, their buses are quite easy to operate. You just go in one side, just, you know, you beep, and then you get on and then get off, and then you beep again and leave. It's actually much easier than I first thought it was going to be to actually navigate around, which was kind of interesting, because one of the locals that my friend knows from Japan said initially that the transportation by bus wasn't that good in Kyoto, but it actually wasn't that bad when we went. So maybe it's improved since he's been, you know? So I'd say it kind of makes up for it in that sense. You will be walking a lot, though, still in Kyoto, even as you go to different bus stations, though, because everything, like I said, is much further apart. And the very last one I do want to mention, this was kind of the best one. Thanks for providing a picture there, Joseph, of the Kinkakuji there. The last one, and I think this was probably the best one, it kind of was advertised, but it was everything it said in the tenant was actually, it really kind of hit you with that kind of touristy sort of like cultural splendor, was I believe it's Fushimi Inari Shrine. This is the one that you might know of because you might have seen in the show, because it just has so many of these arches.
Mm-hmm.
Like hundreds, I think it's actually thousands of these arches just going up up a hill, a very steep hill. There's lots of stairs.
Something about walking under all of them results in something.
I don't actually know if there's like a story around that. There's just so many of them, though. Like, because the path splits up as well, and then there's other ones you can go under, and then you see all these like different sort of like shrines that have like fox statues and stuff. There's lots of foxes there as well, like fox statues, and they also have lots of mini arches like around them, and you can buy mini arches and just place them at different spots here too. It's quite the walk, but it's actually very nice to just kind of go up this, and it feels mysterious, like you're being transported to some sort of fantasy world and stuff when you're surrounded by all this. Like, it combines some of the splendor from the bamboo forest, but with a little bit of like the structure of like the cool temples as well, where it has like some man-made stuff. So we went at the prime time. So we went, as in like a good time for if you're actually a visitor. We went like around 8 a.m. once again, and that meant that it was less populated. It started to get congested as we left, especially at the base of the hill. But I think as you get higher up, because it is a walk, by the way, it's actually very steep. Less of those
fat fuckers following you.
I didn't want to be like that. In so many words,
I'm American,
there's
I can
less
say
people
it.
Who managed to make it to the top, especially in the hot weather that we had that day. So it was actually less congested at the very top, and you can get plenty of shots probably where it looks like there's no one else there. So I think it's pretty good. You can definitely split off. It is not just one trail that goes up and down. It kind of is like this large circle with little mini like side paths you can take. So you will be able to likely find a spot where you can take some nice photos by yourself if you want to. So it's photogenic. There are, and if you do get tired, by the way, there are like pit stops as you go off, little mini Japanese cafes as well, and little like pits where you can buy drinks and buy like refreshments, ice cream, stuff like that. So we sat and had some ice cream and got some pit stops. And obviously there's tourist stuff like postcards and souvenirs you can buy on your way up too. Lots of them either shrine themed or fox themed, because they have the thing for foxes there.
Ooh, do they sell fox masks?
They do. Oh, they do actually sell the fox mask. Yes. In fact, now that you ask, I actually bought a fox mask while I was there. How did you know? Let me just send a picture. It's hanging on the light next to my desk actually right now. Let me just put it here. I like they come in different colors and variety. Some of them look a little bit more
gotta
like
get the traditional
angry
one, like the white and the red with the black. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the one with like the inverse color as well, where it's like black mostly as well.
Ooh.
Here is the picture of the fox mask that I bought. Here you go. It's hanging on the light next to my desk right now. So I have that. Yay. And that's pretty much it in terms of the outdoorsy locations and as a result, my IRL news. So yeah, definitely go to Kyoto if you like to walk and you like to see the good, you know, the good sights and the historic stuff. It definitely lives up to that. I wouldn't recommend necessarily staying there for like the longest stretch of your journey, because eventually you do kind of get tired of just like, it's just, you know, historic site after historic site, unless that's your only sort of passion. It's nice to have a little bit more variety, and you know, Kyoto's not like it's a city, but it's not like, it's not got the same sort of vibes as like an Osaka or Tokyo when it comes to that. So yeah, it's definitely fits the purpose, but I would say that you can definitely get a lot of the culture in a shorter space of time and not have to stretch out too long, because otherwise it does feel a little bit more like a slower paced thing. But yeah, in that case, I think that's good for our IRL section for today. And in that case, we can move on to our community section now.
Okay, community.
And on the community section side of things, we have one new comment from a Yotaro Vegeta on episode 854, Ayakashi the Strongest. He says, Vic, the American was the one schooling you on bidets. Yes, it's not a standard actually in the UK to have bidets, actually. I know of them. My first experience actually of really seeing bidets was actually when I took a trip to Portugal. Bidets? Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it. Is that French? I think I've probably asked that before. Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, it's fine. If I mispronounce something that's French, it matters less here in the UK. But yeah, no, my first encounter of a bidet was in Portugal. We don't really have them in commonplace here. I know what they were from, I think, movies and stuff, but we don't actually commonly have something that shoots water up your ass. Is it actually a common thing in America?
No, but it's like...
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's some cultures are trying to like force it upon us where it's like toilet paper. No, you must use water up your asshole. And it's like, bro, the only thing that goes up my asshole is nothing. Everything comes out it. I don't want nothing going up there.
There is there's a thing they do try to sell, I think at like Costco and stuff, which are like wipes where like, you know, you use the toilet paper and then you finish off with like a wet wipe and stuff. And they're supposed to be flushable.
Yeah,
and you're supposed to be flushable too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have them here, but
I endorse those. Those are fine.
If you're a man, you don't use them. You use your hand. You get in there. You just scrape and you wash your hand off afterwards. Using nothing but charcoal.
No. But yes, I did get skilled on the bidet and the bidet. And that's basically it for the comments. On that bombshell, let's move on to the show topic. Do we have any updates to last week? Let's see. I think that one was read out about Gurren Lagann, so I think that means we can move on to this week's topic.
Was it? I'm not entirely sure if Jenna's was, because hers was posted at 6:04.
Oh,
because
it says...
Would have been basically over by then.
That's a good point. Hey, Joseph, do you want to read out?
Just in case, Jenna, we'll read yours, even if we didn't read it already. Good morning, guys. It's sad to see Gainax go, but bloody hell, what a legacy to leave behind. I owe so much of my teen years to these anime, and it definitely has had an effect on who I am today. While I love Dantalia no Shoka, I would hesitate to say why it's important, aside from fueling my passion. No, wait, we did. I remember you talking about her saying passion for Gothic Lolita mystery. I remember that part. So you did read it.
Okay, well, Jenna, you got focused on twice. So yes.
Congratulations. You fooled well me.
I think she posted it just before we ended the topic. That's why, I think. Okay. Yeah, I was like, I was reading out my answers, and I was like, I see you typing, you have until I finish my answers to finish posting it. I remember saying that. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now. Anyways, so that leads us to this week's show topic, which is something that actually, you know, hasn't been asked before, but you know, it seems to be coming more topical given the announcement, the news from last week regarding the Ranma remake. So this week, what are your top characters that have changed into the opposite gender? This could be through the use of magic or science, but I don't know if this has happened enough, so I will also allow the use of cross-dressing in the answers as well. But there is an asterisk. Please avoid citing traps in your answers, as looking like the opposite sex is already their normal state of being, and it already has its own show topic in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I actually came in with a couple of my own answers here, going with Hinata mm-hmm. Tachibana from Life with an Ordinary Guy Who Reincarnated into a Total Fantasy Knockout, which was one of the rare gender bend animes that I actually enjoyed. Just because this is a guy who doesn't suddenly become a, like, yeah, I'm a princess girl, right after he turns into a girl from being a guy. He just acts like a guy still, he sits like a guy still, and he abuses the fact that now he is this charming, beautiful girl that can basically look at someone without wearing her gear, and they're just instantly in love with her, and she's, you know, he is or she is abusing that.
So in that anime, like, there's no gradual shift over time to him becoming more feminine or anything like that, or?
Well, the whole thing is, in the original world they're from, his friend was already kind of having feelings for him, but he held back because he wasn't the right type of person for him, like when it came to like body type. But this girl is now is actually his friend's type 100%. And so with his friend's personality and, you know, body memories and stuff already in there, and this perfect form girl, he's basically holding on by a string of not just like being like, all right, we're going at it.
So the friend already liked him when he was a guy. So is he kind of like, he's a bi then?
I don't know. I think that maybe they didn't really delve too deeply into that relationship, just because it was literally like the beginning of the first episode. But you could see like they're really close, or at least his friend was really close with him, and they were very comfortable.
I see.
And the reason why his friend wants him to turn back into a guy again is because it was his safe zone. Because girls crowd around his friend so much because his friend is a very handsome man.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of complicated, actually, in a way. The dynamic.
Is. Yeah. And then, of course, Ranma Saotome from Ranma One Half. Just, I would say, almost the poster child for gender bending in anime.
Probably. It's definitely the oldest anime I've seen that has something like this in it. By the way, this gif here, her eyes is looking very, like, glazed over. Is she hypnotized in this?
This is like, from an episode where there was a mirror in the dojo, and like the mirror had a girl in it or something, a ghost that possesses Ranma. Ranma gets possessed by the ghost, and his actual soul was in the mirror.
Yeah.
And this is like that moment where he was being possessed by the ghost, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time, but
Ranma does not really look in character in this gif. Yeah, he's looking particularly sinister.
Plus, Ranma doesn't usually wear his hair down like that. It's very rare you'll ever see his hair undone.
It's funny because, like, you know, the ponytail gets undone and suddenly there's like triple times the mass.
Yeah. Which it's explained. It's also crazy. Again, there is a whole episode about why he has so much hair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that like based on his kung fu teachings or something like that?
No, he drank some kind of soup that had hair revitalizing properties to it.
Oh,
that his
really?
Father was trying to drink. And his hair started growing like crazy. And so now his ponytail there usually has to be worn with a whisker of some kind of dragon or turtle or something like that. That way his hair doesn't keep growing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know there was deep lore behind the reason Ranma grows his hair out. Yeah. That's crazy. I did not get that far. Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Got a more recent entry and a classic entry here from Joseph. And then next up we have a wolfling who says, Yukimura Kusunoki from Haganai. I don't have many friends. At first, a trap even to herself. See, I don't actually know the real context behind this. Apparently, this is kind of gets around the loophole of mentioning a trap because this anime treats her as a... I'm quoting this. This anime treats her as a trap right up until the reveal at the amusement park where she finds out her true biological sex. But she stays true to her pursuit of manliness and continues to cross-dress outside of the club. I don't really know... Have you seen Haganai? Do you know more context that can explain this?
So all I can really give at this point, or really understand or remember, is that this character here... portrays themselves as a guy. Like, they wear, like, a butler outfit and whatnot when they first start. And they want to, like, they go to the main character to, like, try to become more manly. They go to him being like, hey, you got to teach me how to be more manly. Because I look so feminine. I don't want to be feminine. I'm a guy. Please teach me how to be a bro Aniki. That kind of thing. And they don't come to terms with the fact that they are actually female until much later on during, of course, that scene there where they're just like, oh, I am a girl. But I'm not going to give up.
Yeah.
I'm still going to try to be a guy. even though they're now in love, of course, with the main character, and he's not into guys from what we can tell.
All right. Okay, fair. Thanks for the explanation. I guess we can give it a pass due to the explanation, and then, you know, I've never seen the show, so I'll take all your guys' word for it. In that case, we move on to the next answer.
Yes. I have used this in another question, I think. I definitely have mentioned Gintama, but there was a gender swap arc in Gintama because Gintama parodied and satirized? Mm. Is that it? Every trend in anime at the time. There are a lot of great moments in the arc. Gintoki is now a hot girl, but he's as stupid and ridiculous as ever. Kagura has become a massive muscular warrior, similar to a Romance of the Three Kingdoms character. Shinpachi is worthless, so his gender swap is that his glasses have changed to pink. His sister has it worse than him, because nothing about her has changed. Memorially challenged? I guess you could say it like that. booby challenged. It wouldn't matter much if she became a man. So she's pissed off that all the men are now extremely gifted women.
Ah. Main guy looks pretty good in that version, actually. Quite a nice design.
Oh, how apropos, Andrew.
Oh, because I got the Goku?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if this counts. This is Goku's Nick Kent. I don't know if this counts, but I'm kind of thinking outside of the box, or maybe inside the box, because it's bigger on the inside with an Android count. If so, then my favorite one is our Dorothy Wainwright from Big O. Wait.
I don't know. Was there ever an episode where Dorothy was not a girl?
I don't think so. Actually, this might be a bit too outside of the box for my understanding. You know, this might be 4D levels of understanding, and I'm not able to think beyond the
third
dimension.
Goku's gonna explain it, and we're gonna have the brain exploding, being like, "Whoa!"
Yeah. But I will, you know, I will leave that to the audience to decipher, as to what that could have actually meant in terms of it being a time where someone changed gender. But yeah, in that case, thanks for the answer. Next up, you know, you got the last one there, Joseph.
All right, Premierier says, well, my answer is going to be short and sweet due to not having seen many anime that involve a character going from one gender to another. That said, my entry for this week's topic is Hazumu Osaragi from Kashimashi Girl Meets Girl. Huh, where have I heard from that anime before?
I don't know.
Yeah, as you may already know or will have learned by the time you read this, our MC starts out as a boy but is changed into a girl via some alien hijinks. How this happens and or what happens next? Well, you either know or you will know here soon enough. Predicting the future.
Yeah. I think he already is clued in from the topic as to what I was planning to review today, you know? So, and oftentimes, I don't know if anyone here has noticed this, oftentimes the anime I'm reviewing or covering influences the topic I choose as well. So, yeah. Anyway, Tywill is typing while he is...
He says, the friend from one. MM. What? However, I think the friend from MM looks pretty effeminate.
So, I'm guessing that used to be a dude?
It's been a while. Have you seen MM? MM?
Oh.
Yeah, MM. Let's see if I can find the friend. Was that? Nope, that was a school nurse. I have another, but I can't find the name. Yeah, they're not listed among like the support characters on MAL, from what I can see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, wait. Was this it? Yes, okay, here. Their name is Tatsukuchi Hayama, which also their nickname is Tatsumi Antoinette XVI. Close friend of Sato's and classmate, he enjoys cross-dressing. Unaware of his friend's hobby, Taro develops a crush on his female alter ego.
There you go. So there you go, cross-dressing.
Yeah, he just enjoys cross-dressing, so he's not necessarily attractive, just because he doesn't look like a girl in his male form. So there we go.
Yep. I believe so. That all works out, all checks up. I'm glad we balanced the books. Also, Goku said that genderless android trying to be female gender is how he tried to include Dorothy or Wainwright, just to correct the whole confusion about the whole...
Was there ever an episode
where it's a bit of a stretch?
It was ever stated outright where it's like she doesn't have like the things that would more define her as a female.
Yeah. I mean, I don't honestly understand. I don't it could go either way. I'm not honestly sure why she would either way, but that's it is technically an android, so not cyborg, so probably full machine. So technically, if we're going to be super technical, there's neither, but I think as far as her creation was concerned, she probably always was, you know, Dorothy, as far as since she was conscious, so yeah. You could argue both ways in a court of law.
AI robots listening to this right now being like, these fucking humans always assigning gender to us. You fucking children. You pigs.
Anyways, before we move on, I'm going to just round this off, this topic, with some answers of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have some images from it. I actually got a few. So on the shonen side, I want to include... this is a more of a comedic sort of shonen side, but it actually is relevant to the... oh, don't worry. Goku said sorry for the stupid answer. Don't be sorry. It's fine. It's all in good fun. We had some moments of confusion, but it was fun. We got there in the end. The first one I want to cite is a character called Emporio Ivankov. He's from the anime One Piece, or manga One Piece. And he is based off of, I believe, the sweet transvestite from the Rocky Horror show. And he has the ability to inject you with various forms of hormones. And one of them is like the ability to change your gender because of his hormone powers. He does it to himself, though, as well, and actually as an application for combat. See, when he's in his regular form, he's able to use like all of his like, you know, injection powers and stuff. But if he needs to be a little bit more agile and slick, this is actually something that's kind of taken from Ranma in a sense. He transforms into this female version as well, where he is faster and harder to keep up with as well. So there you go. I think they kind of play on that with Ranma too, where he's got more physical prowess when he's male Ranma, but when he's female Ranma, he's harder to hit. So they kind of do that same thing in Ranma. That's just an example of it being applied to in an actual combat sense, which is kind of interesting for a shonen show to use. There's also, on the more just full-on comedy side, there's a character called Yena from the anime Seton, or manga Seton Academy, which is an anime about a school that's entirely populated by animal humans. In fact, the one guy is like the anomaly in the show, because most of them are all animals, and he's went to them. Yena-chan is actually a girl, but is she dresses up like this on purpose because she's pretty sure that she is a guy, because, well, this show's jokes largely revolve around real animal facts. And if you didn't know this one about anatomy and hyenas, even female hyenas technically have the male part, if you know what I mean. So they kind of play on that a little bit, even though she is a female. She cross-dresses to try to hide that. And that's pretty much it. There is a part of the show where she dresses as a female and is able to just kind of like try to adjust and live normally in that sort of form, but eventually ends up reverting back to having to cross-dress because it's where she's most comfortable. Sticking with the whole comedy side of things, I don't know if you know, but there's this anime called Saiki Kusuo, or The Disastrous Life of Saiki K, where the main guy has basically all the superpowers in the world. He's an esper. He's probably the most overpowered character in like shonen shows. One of the most, next to Saitama in a way, but to be honest, Saiki's powers actually kind of border on reality altering, so he might actually be stronger than Saitama in some senses of the word. because he has basically all the powers, one of them is in fact for comedic purposes, he's able to just automatically just change his gender when it suits, and he just does this to basically fool one of the characters and get them off his back basically at one point in time. So yeah, that's pretty much it. He has a form called Kusuko as well. I guess also, I guess a lot of these actually are comedies. Actually, this was one that was suggested by Joseph, but I have seen this show, so I thought I'd give a nod to this show now that the studio is also already dead. There was the main girl, mm-hmm. Tail Red, from the show I Want to Be the Twin Tail. And it's not a great show. It's not even really a good show. It's just an otaku-y, one of those otaku-y flavored sort of shows where it's focused on the, all these fandoms and things that like anime fans are big into, one of them being like the twin tails, girls with twin tails, and then there's like one around glasses and all these different things that otakus tend to be into, and the main guy loves twin tails with all of his might, and he needs to transform into essentially kind of like a cross between magical girls and Power Rangers, which is Tail Red, in order to fight off these big monsters that are also into various otaku interests as well. And that's why he transforms into this female form called Tail Red, and he gets twin tails of his own. And that's basically it. The studio is dead now. Unfortunately, that studio didn't do very well. The budget is not great, but that being said, it's a pretty funny show in some senses of the word.
Tail Red sees tentacle monsters, like, I know where this fucking goes. Nope.
Yep. It's very self-aware on that side of things too. Yeah, definitely. Going off to some more serious stuff to round out this topic, though, for me, I've got this one here, which would be the literature, is it Literature Club, I think, or something? Yeah, Literal Study Club from the anime Kokoro Connect. The first arc of the show involves a phenomena where basically at random, all these five characters you see here all start switching bodies with each other. So this is less of a cross-dressing or transformation, but it's from body swapping. Hmm. And this show is super dramatastic, and this one embodies most of like the kind of drama. It creates the first semblance of character drama between the characters through them having to experience life through each other as well. It's actually quite good if you're into that kind of just like serious like school drama stuff. But because of that, it also involves a lot of body switching and gender swapping as a result there. So I thought this one gets an honorable mention. The last one was also suggested to me by Joseph, and yeah, I do like the show. The main psychotic lolly character from Tanya the Evil. This girl used to be a hardworking, brutal Japanese salaryman, and now he's become an incredibly ruthless lolly major general, whatever, for like
a totally not
pseudo
Germany.
German army. Yeah, for pseudo Germany, basically in fantasy World War II.
Johnny is Sebastian.
true to the name of the show, Tanya does some ruthless things to get the job done, largely just out of spite. She does everything she does, good or bad, just to spite the being that caused her to reincarnate in that body to begin with, which is kind of an interesting premise to the show in and of itself. So yeah, Tanya the Evil, interesting character and instance of gender bending in an anime for sure. And that does it for my answers for today, and thus today's community section as a whole. And with that, we can move on to our large Chungus news segment before we go into some reviews. Right, Joseph? It's massive.
Yes, yeah, so massive. It's only one topic. So the JR East train pulled into Odawara Station on the night of May 11th, around 7:35 p.m. The station worker, tasked with checking the interior, wasn't too surprised, however, to see a man sitting motionless in a two-person bench. As you know, sometimes people tend to oversleep and they get on the train after a hard day's work, just conk right out and just completely sleep through it. I mean, I slept on trains before, yeah. And I love the little click, 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 click noise that trains make. It's almost kind of like...
Yeah, there's like a sound noise, yeah. To it. There's like a rhythm to the movement. It's almost like you're being rocked a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Back in a big baby carriage and mother train is going...
Maybe argue that because of like the slight deprivation of like fresh oxygen, that might also make you feel a bit more lightheaded and sleepy too.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
the ventilation isn't good.
This passenger was not responding to him at all when he called out to the man. And upon closer inspection, not only was he sitting completely motionless, he was not breathing. Checking for a pulse, he found the man did not have one, and attempts to resuscitate him using a defibrillator nearby proved unsuccessful. He had long expired. And after an examination by the coroner's office, it was found that he had been on that train for nearly 12 hours, having died.
Yep. Unfortunate.
The man boarded boarded the train on the Shinona Shinjuku line at the Shibuya station in downtown Tokyo at 8:02 in the morning, and ended up going back and forth around 11 hours and 32 minutes, making 4 trips across downtown Tokyo, covering 652.7 kilometers.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Was the guy, do you know if the guy was really old or something, or had other sort of like...
They don't mention what his name is or how old he was or anything like that, but they do say that police have ruled out foul play. The man was ostensibly appearing to other passengers as having been asleep, which also suggests there was no physical injuries either. And of course, it's again not uncommon to see these people who are asleep. In fact, there is even a phrase that some people will use on these trains, which in case a passenger thinks that someone may need medical assistance, which is densha ii shikei fume no hito ga iru, which I guess means there's an unconscious person on the train.
Ah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then there's sometimes those awkward instances where someone falls asleep next to you and they end up on your shoulder.
Yeah.
It's happened a few times to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you're a hot girl, person across the couch is laughing at me. It leads to other problems.
Oh, no. I wasn't going to go there, but yeah. It's honestly, to be honest, for me, it's only been dudes that have fallen asleep on my shoulder on the train.
Damn. Well. Yeah, I've only ever been on a train where I've had my own seat, or I've had a sleeper car on a train before, but I've never actually slept on a train with with strangers next to me.
Okay, no. It's happened to me on, like, the tube, because, you know, London Transport's oftentimes the underground sort of tube, the equivalent of what they have in the New York subway. The only female in the vicinity while that happened was sitting across from me, kind of laughing at my, like, oh shit, I'm uncomfortable. So... she was smirking because she was like, I was like, oh, what?
And then
I was
like, it's happening to you.
I guess I'm going to be like this until I have to get off. Yeah.
All right. Well, that does it for today's, this week's news. Chungus news. So much of it.
So much. So much news happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As always, thanks everybody who sends them in. I just didn't have any that really shouted out to me as like I had to report on, but I still appreciate everybody who's posted them in the Anime Talk channel on Discord, so thanks anyways.
And with that, we can move on to our reviews.
Yes, the reviews.
All right, I'll take things away here. Mm-hmm. We all know how it is. You come home from a long day at your 9-to-5 job, and all you want to do is relax. For some, this could be reading a good book. Maybe going for a walk in the woods. Perchance, catching your favorite show on TV. However, for a large portion of the crowd these days, that downtime is occupied with games. Video games. And for one man in a playthrough of a certain dude's VRMMO life, that is exactly how he passes his time at home. An anime I did not especially have high hopes for or great expectations, since I am still a reader of the manga, and, without spoiling too much, I find it to be very mediocre. If the title didn't give it away, the choice of game for a man who we only know by his player name, Earth, is a VRMMO. That is to say, one of those fancy games where you put on a set of VR goggles and suddenly find yourself in another world. However, this is not .hack/ or Sword Art Online or Log Horizon. The players are not trapped in the game, and dying in game does not result in your IRL body flatlining. This is just a far more realistic game, in that it is a beta version undergoing many revisions, nerfs, buffs, and changes made by the developers. The base game is all about creating an avatar and living a life in this fantasy world of magic and monsters the way you want. Be it as an adventurer fighting goblins, a blacksmith pounding away at steel, or a Power Ranger fighting the forces of evil. Like our old pal Todd Howard would say, it just works. For Earth, his way of playing the game is a little ass backwards. He picks the less popular options when creating his avatar, generally avoiding joining guilds or parties, and kind of just does his own thing by multiclassing. His choices, however, become something of a new meta. Bows become far more prolific thanks to him, potion making becomes a vital skill, and even Earth's cooking skill cornholes him into becoming a chef for massive crowds of players. This is not that Earth wants to do it, though. He wants more freedom to do as he wishes, but time and time again, he seems to be pulled into these complicated situations where only his skills can solve the problem. Which may be due in part to the developers of the game watching his every movement and basing many of their changes to the game on actions he takes. With one of them even going as far to say that she knows the IRL person who plays Earth. This part is kind of interesting, but sadly, underutilized. Instead, after participating in a tournament arc and defeating the Queen of the Fairies, he is forced to marry her, gains some pretty OP power, and continues to fuck around and not really give a shit about the game trying to lure him into special quests. Speaking of not giving a shit, Earth is a bit of a prick. And despite having a great deal of power and even greater presence in the game now, he refuses to take responsibility and runs away from others at the first sign they are trying to approach him. I personally hated Earth, and think he's a douchebag. Especially with his treatment of the Queen, who seeks any sort of affection from Earth only for the man to either A. hit her, B. run away, or C. perform a combination of the two. Even when he does, even when she does so much for him to help him, he will continue to treat her poorly and even forces her to seal the power on the ring that she granted him for defeating her. He's an ass and needs to get the shit kicked out of him more often. But because he's the stupid-ass protagonist for the story, he doesn't even die when fighting a fucking dragon solo. Sorry, got a little heated there. I just really hate Earth. He sucks, which is part of the reason why this series is so mediocre. But not the whole reason. See, as a manga watcher, I can clearly say the climax has come and gone. Earth defeating that dragon was it. And everything afterwards is so muddling and foot-dragging that it is clear to me the author has no fucking idea what to do with the story anymore. They just want to keep it going to make a paycheck, so they trudge along, slapping whatever two ideas they got that they can manage to bang together to keep Earth in this unfinished game world, pretending to care about the story, and all the while continuing to inject more new characters who doesn't give a single shit, we don't give a single shit about, and who are supposed to have some greater part to play, but do nothing. And yet, I'm still the biggest idiot for them all for sticking with it, as I want to see the bloody thing end so I can put a bow on this stale cookie batch of a series and clean up my reading list a little bit. Will I ever learn to value my time more?
Stay tuned.
Speaking of mediocre things, the animation was another, provided by the guys over at Maho Film, whom you'll remember for other works like If It's For My Daughter, I'd Even Defeat a Demon Lord, By the Grace of the Gods, and I'm the Villainess, So I'm Taming the Final Boss. I had higher hopes for this studio when they first stepped out into the animation world, but clearly they lack the magic their name implies, as all the works they have done till now have been pretty mundane and very seasonally average. There's nothing about them that makes them unique, so they add nothing to the mediocre VR MMO experience. As sort of voice acting, care to guess how I felt about this category?
You loved it.
Not quite. It was mediocre. With nothing to praise, but really nothing to hate on either. It existed, but that's as much as I could say. And my favorite character. Going to be giving this one a hard pass, Chief. Earth is a huge dickhead, but the story revolves around him, so there are very little other supporting characters who get much screen time. The Queen might have been a solid contender to be a surprise underdog winner, but she's a very one-note character in that she allows Earth to abuse her despite seeking to pleasure him at any chance she can. I can see why Earth is a single loser who plays games at home all day after work. He has zero social skills. And that's coming from me. But you don't see me abusing NPCs in game who might actually be a form of AI that may eventually overthrow humans and remember all the actions you took. So of course, if the Queen had been more evolving to tell Earth to go fuck himself when he got into dangerous situations, she would have been a winner in my book. A shame. Which brings me to my score. A playthrough of a certain dude's VR MMO life gets a burn it.
Yeah, boy!
Yeah, congratulations.
We're so back. I was so concerned. I was really concerned because you kept saying mediocre. And I was like, oh, that might mean Netflix only. That might mean he doesn't hate it enough. But every time you started twisting the knife on how much of a dickhead the main character
I started to believe. He's a piece of shit.
You hate the Earth. Yeah.
Our what Earth, a name. I love Earth. Earth is great. I love being here. But Earth from this game, from this fucking anime, he could die for all I care.
I see. He could die in the game and real life.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Andrew.
All right.
Why don't you, you hit us with something?
On that case.
Something that has been rumored or hinted at. Earlier on in the show.
Yes,
in the,
foreshadowing yes, and the stuff. Foreshadowing. And again, may or may not have influence today's show topic. So, I have to admit, I've largely been distracted over the last few weeks. There's been a lot going on. A lot I'm trying to get done with the finite amount of time I have. It's my hope that some of it will end up paying off and I can perhaps provide those interested here with some more content. Thank you for being patient with me, and as an act of goodwill, I thought I'd get right back into dealing with some of those requests, since those have been piling up in the background, and I do still appreciate them. So today, I will be dealing with a surprisingly old anime, all things considered, requested by one Pumeria. An anime called Kashimashi Girl Meets Girl, which, if the title didn't give it away, is a show in the girls love genre, you don't say, which... Even there is, even that, an aspect is a little murky given the premise, but I'll get right into that so you can understand why. Synopsis: this anime initially stars a young man, and I say initially stars a young man, named Osoragi Hazumu, an incredibly feminine youngster who's big into gardening and has feminine mannerisms, and has also like the stereotypical hentai protagonist eyes, in the sense that his hair just covers his eyes, you never get to see them for some reason. And has, I guess, generally speaking, an androgynous physique. And guess what, Joseph? He's voiced by a girl.
It
will eventually fit, though. I ruined everything. Well, you know, it does. I guess it becomes more fitting as we go, you see. So that does not dissuade him from manning up and confessing to that quiet, flute-playing, lonely-looking girl he started forming a crush on one day while trekking in the hills. He does, however, in the starting episode of this series, find himself walking that same trail to clear his head when it turns out that the confession does not quite go his way in a sort of half-answer, because Yasuna, the girl he confessed to his demeanor, still actually implies that she has some sort of alternative reason for turning him down, and she seemed genuinely happy to hear him confess to her at first. On a side note, if you're trying to get over a failed relationship or attempt at a relationship with someone and you want to put that behind you, you might want to not go to the specific location that you closely associate with that individual. I'm just saying, bit of word of advice. While that's happening though, they also establish Hazumu's friend group, who coaxed him into the confession in the first place and are now searching for him all concerned. The most important of which is Tomari, Hazumu's childhood friend, who is established right from the get-go to also have a crush on Hazumu for the longest time, followed by side characters, token comic relief dude, and Glasses-chan. Anyways, while fate conspires so that all of our three main characters, Hazumu, Yasuna, and Tomari, are in roughly the same area, an alien spaceship is passing over Earth, it faces a malfunction, and it starts plummeting towards the planet. Mistaking it for a shooting star, Hazuma uses his opportunity to atop the hill to pray that he gets lucky in love and that he could become more manly. Well, he gets the former. You see, the rather phallic-shaped spaceship actually crashes headfirst into Hazuma, symbolic, and via alien magic does no damage to the surrounding area. And like Inuyashiki, the aliens are gracious enough to give him his life back. But unlike Inuyashiki, where the aliens give you a robot body with godly levels of power, these ones are less competent and apparently reconstruct Hazuma's body through whichever rule there is online about gender swapping. The aliens broadcast that to the entire city with an apology worthy of a politician and dump him back on Earth, naked, where Tomari and Yasuna both run to catch him or her now, I guess, while Hazuma is seemingly unfazed. This obviously brings about mixed reactions from the two girls, with Tomari looking plain shocked and Yasuna appearing to be surprisingly happy about this development. Regardless, life goes on for Hazuma as the first human to be transed by an alien. How will this affect his relationship or her relationship going forward? Well, you have 11 more episodes plus one OVA that is considered to be the ultimate conclusion to find out. Yeah, so the main thing is that Hazuma's life has been flipped, turned upside down in many ways, and with that, her romance prospects with Yasuna and Tomari begins to change in turn. This show is all about the love triangle life, and in fact, the series starts on a flash forward to Yasuna kissing Hazuma in girl form in a sunset-bathed classroom as Tomari walks in, dropping all of the tools she was carrying on in shock. So, what is the actual truth of the dynamic and the drama being set up? Because half of it, you would never actually guess what it is. You see, I'll go with the obvious one first. Tomari's the childhood friend. She's the tomboy Tomari. That surprisingly works kind of together, tomboy Tomari. And she has a crush on Hazuma for the longest time when he once said to her as a child that he would like to be together with her forever as her groom. She has long since thought that Hazuma has forgot about this promise and was even pushing him onto Yasuna at the start of the show as a way of trying to get over him with Bennett Foddy. However, since the whole alien thing and Yasuna's initial rejection thing happened, things have gotten a little bit more complicated, and as the show carries on, she finds it even harder to let her first love go, even if he is no longer a he. Now there's the other girl, which is Yasuna, and it's a little bit more out there, and by the end it turns out to be slightly tied in with the whole alien subplot, if you can believe it. Seeing as this show was labelled a girl's love show, and given her reaction to Hazuma post-alien operation, I assumed that she was simply a lesbonius. But get this, Yasuna has a unique affliction where she is actually unable to see men. We get to see things from her perspective at moments, and she basically just sees guys as black and white TV static silhouettes. So this is where Hazuma, the main protagonist, enters the picture as the only guy she is actually able to see, probably because her vision distinguishes male characters that are voiced by a girl, wink wink. Anyways, therein lies the truth as to why she actually turned has-been male in from the start. She turned him down, I mean. She loved him, in fact, almost at first sight, but could not accept his feelings for fear that he too would disappear from her vision if she did. Now that he is biologically female, she is now less concerned about that, as you might expect. Meanwhile, with all of this going on, Hazuma is indecisive, kind of playing the romantic equivalent of damage control. She flip-flops between each love interest, undecided, seemingly based on which seems to make him feel more sorry for them. And that is the kind of drama side to this romance, right up to the climax, which, before I get into thoughts on, I should also briefly mention that there's also a sizable amount of side cast characters that we'll attempt to sum up here. As mentioned, there is the Glasses-chan, and she is the second female character in the Girls Love show I have reviewed so far, whose purpose is simply to observe and stir the pot from the side. She's dedicated to being a side character first and foremost. In fact, there's an entire episode kind of about her being a side character in an almost meta sense. And by the way, she has a crush on Hazuma. This is going to be a trend. And then there's also the token male comic relief dude side character who is supposedly Hazuma's old best friend, despite the fact that the two basically share no scenes together. He is there to be dropkicked by the tomboy, as was hip and trendy in oldish anime times, whenever he does anything that's remotely considered to be perverted, usually at Hazuma's expense. Oh, he also develops a crush on Hazuma that goes nowhere, seeing as he's now in a show that has the wrong genre tags. Then there's Hazuma's parents, whose one joke is that the mom likes to dress her new daughter up in girly clothes, and unfortunately the dad shtick is to want to take a bath with his new daughter. There are not many variations of this joke, and the humor levels, I did this with the two fingers gesture, the humor levels of it are not quite sufficient to supersede the creepy implications. There's also the teacher. Now, I don't know if you've watched enough old anime that have like a teacher character who's like overly concerned about her students. She's 35 years old, and she makes sure to let you know she is 35 years old, and she also makes sure to let you know every time that she's never had a boyfriend. So this is the tried and tested cake. Christmas cake. Mm. Christmas cake.
Give me a slice
teacher
of that.
Character. Yep, who looks young, pretty young for her age, honestly, and still is, you know, dedicated to being, you know, there for her students first, because that's why she says is why she's never had a boyfriend. But that is about to change, because she in fact does find love at first sight for herself, and she starts pining over one of the last supporting characters. Speaking of which, the one of the last supporting characters that she pines over, it's sort of like in the basically the female equivalent to what the male token dude does. She pines over the alien Glasses-kun, the same one that actually crashed his ship into Hazumu at the start of the show. He's often shown as like this tall, glasses Japanese teacher looking dude. He wears a yellow Pikmin outfit and sometimes a lab coat. And he's just now decided to stay at Earth in the meantime while trying to observe humanity. Oft, you know, it turns out for all ulterior motives by the end, but that's a spoiler territory. And alongside him, we also have the final supporting character, Janpu, who is basically a clone of Hazumu, who's actually the consciousness of the spaceship, who also by the end of the show, you might have guessed it, has feelings for Hazumu also. See what I mean by, at the very least, Hazumu got his first wish about being lucky in love, since everybody seems to be a Hazumu sexual. Oh yeah, I'm not going to bother in the thought section going into anything about plot stuff, because this show is mostly just about the romance and the drama, and it considers itself to be a bit of a comedy, but there's not much there. You basically just have to hand wave that the world stopped caring about the fact that aliens are now confirmed to be real, to the point where we see that the president of America has to be alerted at the presence of aliens, and there's paparazzi all crowding around Hazumu in like episode 2, because obviously this is the first human to make contact with aliens, so it's kind of a big thing. But they get scared away by his childhood friend, and they, I guess, presumably they never come back. I think it's just kind of like the opening 5 minutes from the movie Ted, where like at first the world gives a huge shit about there being a sentient teddy bear, and then eventually the world just stops giving a fuck. It kind of happens with Hazumu. Like, nobody cares by like episode 3. So there you go. Now on to thoughts. Anyways, breaking it down by genre, it does technically have comedic moments, but this is one of those like comedy with like the quotation marks around it. It's definitely makes me feel kind of old. It's like if you grew up around the time of like 90s 2000s animes, there's a lot of common tropes that are here. You have the Christmas cake thing. A lot of the characters are very kind of over the top, and they have one gag assigned to them, and then each time they come in an episode, it's their time to do the gag of, oh, I'm the dad character that pervs after my daughter, I want to take photos of her, I'm the 35 year old teacher that has to let you know that I don't have a boyfriend every time. And they all have that thing that's just going on and on. It does feel weirdly nostalgic, but definitely it's not really hitting the same way that I think it probably did back in its time. So it's comedy in the sense that there are jokes in there, but it's not really a comedy show, because it's not a show that revolves around the jokes. Kashimashi is a romance drama show first, wherein the comedy is kind of there to pad out the runtime and sort of endear you to some of the side characters, I guess. Which may or may not, you know, the mileage may vary on that front. Now, also the idea of it being a girl's love show, as I mentioned, is also a little bit strange in some ways at the start, because Hazumu does not start out that way and definitely didn't choose to transition. But that having been said, this is one instance of a male-turned-female lead wherein there is frankly no significant or honestly any interesting change to his life whatsoever. And by that I mean, despite what Tomari says about his voice changing when he first transforms, he already sounded pretty fucking girly to begin with. And then, you know, he seemed and acted more feminine than some of the girls' characters already did in the show to begin with. By the way that, you know, that is also fine for a guy, but it does result in him seemingly adjusting with no effort to a change that would be pretty big for the majority of people if it was thrust upon them. thrust upon them. I sort of framed it in my mind this way. If this anime started out with Hazumu already being a female, you really would not change too much of the significant elements of the show. And as a result, I have to admit, the gender swap thing kind of comes across as a bit of a gimmick than it does anything else. Which, on a side note, is a little bit of a shame for me personally, as I honestly can't help but find what life would be like on the other side of the coin to be like an interesting hypothetical. It is one of those things you could simulate in your head, but could never really truly know how it would play out in, you know, as with many things in life. Still, lastly, there was the drama tag and the romance drama. And there is romance and there is drama. There's a lot more drama than there's romance. Not all bad, mind you. And as you are left wondering how the relationship, at least between the main three, is going to be resolved by the end of the show, you know, you're kind of on the edge there, seeing, you know, it might be this girl's chance. This might be this girl's chance who's going to have Hazumu by the end. Unfortunately, and I'm not going to spoil into the specifics, but I will say here that the answer is kind of bad.
I'm going to guess now.
It has been...
No one.
No. Incorrect. I will say somebody gets him.
Oh.
Or gets her. Yeah. But it's been a long time since I watched an anime bend itself backwards to create an amicable ending to the relationship drama and just end up making most of the main characters at least come across kind of bad. Hazumu, on one hand, feels like she completely reverted from any semblance of character development by the end with her final choice, and it's really hard for me to not see Yasuna, especially one of the main girls in the triangle, as a complete twat by the end. The show also spends so much time leading up to the conclusion on the drama or relationships that don't have a chance, a snowball chance in hell of actually bearing fruit, that I will say not as much time as I would have liked is spent towards actually building up the present day chemistry between the main characters. As such, the main pairing kind of just boils down to necessity by the end over who you might genuinely want to see paired with who. At the end of the day though, I will say, you know, as I sort of just mentioned to Joseph there, you do get a conclusion. And I know that sounds like, oh, is that big of a deal? Yes. Especially in 2006, where things tended to be quite rife with manga endings, read the manga endings, read the light novel endings, or just discontinued endings with no sort of payoff. This anime does technically have a conclusion. There is a pairing that happens at the very end. And, you know, that is definitely something to, you know, it's definitely a feather to have in its cap. I'll be honest with you. It's nice to have something that just kind of ends. So I will give it at least that. It's something you can sort of pass the time with and watch the conclusion, and at least the conclusion kind of makes sense. But man, did some of the journey to get there feel a little bit padded out. Not just a little bit, kind of very padded out, especially by modern day sensibilities and pacing. Finally, we go on to the presentation. The presentation, well, this is from 2006, and honestly, for something from 2006, it looks fine. It's your standard 4x3 looking anime. The character designs look kind of standard for the time, but I will say the art style of the show is a little bit unique in the sense that, you know, the clothing is kind of unique and stands out a bit. I will say the designs feature a little bit more like a distinct sort of face shape that's kind of chubby looking, that's very much its own. So I will say it looks kind of distinct in that aspect, at least as the female characters. The male characters look generic as all hell, but I mean, who cares about the guys in a show that's about you girls' love, I suppose.
Get them out of here.
I know, right? What the fuck? Get them out. But yeah, the girl characters, at least the ones that they're focused on, have good designs, I suppose, all things considered. And yeah, the animation is fine. The background and all that and the setting, I couldn't really care less about. I don't think it really mattered in this show. But, you know, they don't really in these kinds of slice of life romance drama shows. It's more about the characters. And they animate and look fine, especially for its time. The OP is a little bit catchy, I suppose, at the very least. But I couldn't tell you anything about the ED. This piece was brought to us by a studio called... I don't really talk about them very much. It's called Studio Hibari Anime. Yeah. They've actually made quite a few shows that I've at least checked out, though. So they did Assassination Classroom. They've done Duel Masters. This is an old show. Unfortunately, they did Classroom of the Elite, which I am not a big fan of. They did Monster Musume, though, Joseph. So there's that.
Okay.
Monster Musume. Yeah. They did Jibaku Shonen Hanako-kun, which is about that toilet ghost. High Card. I can't really find much else that you would like. They did Kepeki Danshi Aoyama-kun, which I kind of found was funny for a time. But yeah, not much else is really super standing out to me. But it's nice to see that they're kind of alive and kicking and still making shows to this day. They seem to be one of the older horse sort of anime studios that are still kind of alive and kicking and still producing stuff season after season, which is good to see, honestly, you know, in an industry that's getting more and more competitive and mergers and closures are happening. So hopefully they carry on, even though I'm not a big fan of Classroom of the Elite. But yeah, overall, passable for the time. I think it's still very watchable. You're mostly in there for the drama and stuff and the character designs, and it delivers on that. So there you go. In conclusion, Kashimashi Girls Meets Girl is a pseudo kind of girls' love show, kind of, because it doesn't really delve much into the girls' love aspect. It really does feel like a romance, a meeting of the minds, and just kind of general love conquers all sort of side of things, regardless of the genders of the characters. And that's what I mean when I say that the gender flipping of the protagonist almost feels like an accessory to just like the message about the relationships and love and stuff like that, which, you know, I'm sure I can, but that much mentioning of the word love in one sentence probably already has Joseph gagging, so I'll carry on from there. As is, it was an okay entertaining watch, but it's definitely on the slower pace side by today's standard. I didn't really feel much doki doki in my chest from watching it, if I'm honest with you, so didn't really have me kind of like watching it interested in the romance, but I was watching it in a kind of like, this is like watching a soap opera drama of the week sort of thing, and definitely a blast from the past with the aged kind of 90s to 2000s anime jokes in there, which, again, mileage may vary. So it's basically just down the middle, honestly, for this kind of genre. And with that, I'm probably going to rate this one about I'll give this one a 4 out of 10 on Netflix.
Hey, yeah, baby.
Yeah. It just kind of saves itself a little bit by just being kind of watchable, but there's nothing there that's too standout for me personally on the everything else side. So yeah, thanks anyways for the request, Pimiri. I'm still kind of glad I watched it. So yeah, that does it for my review. Thanks for listening.
And thank you everyone for tuning in and sticking with us live for another episode of Anime Pulse. Don't know if we're gonna start on previews next week. Should we? Because that will be...
How many weeks are we in?
Well, it's already started, coming out already.
Mm.
And this will be another week. So that will be 2 weeks in. So...
Do you want to? What do you think, Joseph?
Because if we
what
start does the audience think here too? Next week on the 14th, and we go... Because I have enough for at least three shows. The 14th, the 21st, and the 28th. Then...
Yes.
On the 4th, I'm gone on my vacation, and then when I come back, we could go back to reviews.
Okay, so that sounds to me like you want to go into previews then next week.
Yeah, so I think on the 14th, we'll be into previews then.
Mm.
So, well, we'll bring three shows per person to the table to talk about.
Yep.
What we're going to try to do from now on, three shows per person. So yes, if you're interested, come and join us again next weekend for previews from the summer 2024 season.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've already started checking out some shows already. I don't know if you have already, Joseph.
I have them downloaded. I haven't started watching them, but I am my play button is itchy. I really want to get there.
Mm.
Yeah. I think this week is going
to
be
a big
deal.
When it gets close to the time, when it gets close to the time, let me know which ones you plan on giving a shot.
Oh, I already sent you a list, didn't I?
Oh, yeah, you know, I've got the list. I mean, which ones you're actually doing next week.
Oh, right. The three I'll be covering. Okay, yeah, that's no problem. Yeah.
Cool, thank you.
Anyways, yeah. all of our non-live listeners as well, thank you guys as much for tuning in, checking us out, however you do, wherever you do. It's always appreciated. And, of course, our Patreon supporters, you guys keep the lights on, you keep the servers running, and you keep editing Joseph... setting off fireworks in the middle of the street at 4 a.m.
Oh, he enjoys his fireworks late at night, I see.
He loves setting off the car alarm at 4 a.m. and waking everyone up and making the cops come down and search the street for whippersnappers.
Oh, that wily editing Joseph.
Yeah. What a joker.
What a little scamp, yeah.
Alright, well, until next time, as always... Keep watching, keep listening, and keep the anime love strong.